we are dealing with a topic tonight that is very broad. We certainly won't be able to answer all the questions relating to parenting. And in fact, even the people who are sharing and talking tonight, each of them have said to me individually that they feel like the most unqualified person to speak. And I think that's the very reason they should be speaking tonight, because every child you have, and you parents know this, is different, and every situation is different. And yet at the same time, there is just good that comes through us talking to one another and sharing something of the lessons that we've learnt. And the hope is that tonight, as we go through, we think through some of these different stages that we face and pick up a few lessons that we can learn through each of these stages, that it gives you just some practical ammunition that you need to be able to deal with those lovable terrors at home. So the plan tonight is we're gonna have Julie come up and speak to us for a little bit about dealing with tots, some practical lessons about dealing with tots. We'll ask Suzanne to come up and share something about dealing with kind of primary age kids. I've got a little group that I'll bring up, and we'll ask them a few different questions, a wee panel. So some different questions about dealing with the teens. And then I'm going to ask Jeff Logan to come up and kind of tie everything together and give us some just universal practical tips for parenting that will be of help to us. So that's a general format. A lot of the stuff will overlap, no doubt. And as I said at the very beginning, the people who are sharing, they are not trying to say all that there is to know on any of these topics, but they have put thought in, and all of them have gone through the experience of bringing their own children up through these stages. And I think it's going to be just helpful for us to talk. We will have more tea and coffee. We've got very good at that this week. Lots of tea and lots of coffee. And I said to them tonight, especially those who are parents, are going to need a lot of coffee, because it's that point in the day. And at the end, we'll have time for some more tea, coffee, buns and things, and a chance just to talk to one another and get to know some other parents that are going through the same thing that you're going through, and asking the same questions. And maybe through our conversations with one another, I'll give you one more, arrow for the bow as you try and navigate what is often just very confusing waters. We, Sarah and me, we have two ourselves. This was a hand-picked topic, deliberately put in, because we need help also. So I'm going to ask Julie to come up. For those of you who don't know Julie, she looks after our Mothers and Others group that meets on Friday morning. And so I asked her to come, and she has two of her own that have gone up past the toddler stage, but obviously has a heart for it, and asked her to come and share some advice on dealing with toddlers.
So my name is Julie. For those who don't know me, I am married to Wayne, and we have two children, David and Jessica. David is 11 and Jessica is 9. And I'm a working mum. I work 3 days a week, and I'm the assistant manager of a day nursery within Lygon Valley Hospital. I have worked there for the last 19 years. Before that, I nannied for two children. Before that, I did trained for 2 years, left school and trained, and did my MVQ 2 and 3 in childcare and education. So you would have thought that would have kind of given me a bit of, help when it came to parenting your own. I've looked after hundreds of children in this lovely toddler preschool stage. And, nothing prepares you. You have all these, thoughts of how you're going to do it. And you watch all these other mummies as they're bribing their children to come to nursery, as they're bribing their children to go home from nursery. And you think, oh, I would never do that. Definitely not. Oh, no. And you think that you know it all until your little baby, who is just lovely, turns into that child who you used to walk by going, oh, goodness. And they're screaming in their pram in the middle of a shop. And they're lying on the floor in Tesco's, and you're getting redder and redder by the minute, thinking, I'm the worst mother in the world. We're kind of at that stage. Toddlers, kind of preschool stage, along come the temper tantrums, along come the I can do it myself, and a job that takes 2 seconds for you to do ends up taking 20 minutes, and you're late for everything. The toilet training, that great stage. The endless questions where you just watch the clock until bedtime, and you just think, yay, that's it, silence. But then on the flip side of that, there comes the funny stage where they're learning to talk and they're saying the things so funny and they're mixing up their words and you're laughing at all the silly things. Like Jessica called David Didi until she was about 5 and my heart broke the first time she said David. David called, said we were going to arrest Nunk for something to eat until he was about 8 because I wouldn't correct him until he learned it himself because I just loved the way he said rest Nunk. You know, all the funny wee things that they do. And the cuddles, so this is the stage where they cuddle up beside you and they watch the, all the programs and you can act Balamori and you just know it word for word. But yeah, so I'm kind of here to give tips and kind of, you know, what to do and what, you know, how to handle this stage. And to be honest, I have thought all week. And last night I kind of came home from a meeting and I tried to go to sleep and I couldn't and I had a million things going through my head. So I got up and I started doing a couple of jobs. And then I was thinking, I thought, I can't even remember toddler stage. What am I supposed to be saying? And everything that I had kind of planned to say, I thought, actually, that's a load of nonsense. You know, what are you going to stand and say that for? So I was really thinking. And then I went back to bed, and all of a sudden, it was like a film went on in my head. And I relived some toddler moments. And I thought, oh, actually, it's not that I've forgotten. I think I've intentionally blocked it out completely because I would be traumatized if I actually, you know, thought I might have these things that my children, especially David, and David, you know David, I don't need to say those who know him, I don't need to say much more. David is my testing child. You know, I've done a couple of read a couple of books and done a couple of courses. He's my testing child. Jessica's my compliant child who does what she's told most of the time. David is that child who drains you and asks and asks and asks. And he's the child who has caused all the most embarrassing moments. You know, sitting in the doctor when he walks over and lifts the chocolate bar out of the child's hand and eats it. You know, runs up and down and visits every secretary and the doctors. And I just, like, yeah, you know, I thought I would have known what to do, you know, but no. But number one, what I want to tell mums and dads, you're not alone. It is not just you. And this is coming not from me, this is coming from Rob Parsons. I thought there's no point in me trying to tell you all the advice that I should give you. Rob Parsons is the founder and the guy who runs Care for the Family. If you've, as a parent, if you've never read any books from Care for the Family or know anything about them, go home and Google Care for the Family and get some books and get yourself armed for parenthood. It is a brilliant, brilliant charity. It is a Christian charity. However, you know, it is just practical parenting advice. So you're not alone. It's not just you. You know, I'm sure as I'm talking, yous are all remembering things. Actually, yeah, that happened to me today. Or, yeah, I'm struggling with this at the minute. Or, yeah, I remember that happening if you've kind of passed that stage. But I think in this, you're not alone. We need to be honest with each other as parents and especially as mummies. You know, obviously I'm going to talk as a mum. We like to think we have it in control and we like to think, yeah, everything's fine. And we like other people to think that everything's fine when really we just need to be honest and say, do you know what, I'm really struggling. And I've actually got really good at doing that, as some of my friends will know and as the pastor knows. I'm really good at saying, you know what, I've had a really bad morning and I can rant and I can rave about how tough it is being a mummy. So I think just to be honest, whenever people ask you, how's it going? Don't say, oh, it's wonderful. And, you know, we're very good at telling how wonderful our kids are doing and how good they are at things. And, oh, yes, they can say this and they can do. We don't usually say, well, actually, I've had a really, really tough morning because we'd hear what they did. And just even sometimes to talk about it and just sometimes for someone then to say, that happened to me, or don't worry, that's normal, it's okay, you're fine, you will get through it. So yeah, so be honest with your friends, with each other as parents, and just be there for each other. And you know what, a real person says, do you see if you have a child who is perfect? Don't tell everybody. Because, do you know what? They're probably in the minority, and you're talking to maybe a wee mummy. I remember standing in a mothers and toddlers group, and Jessica was about 6 weeks. I was exhausted, absolutely exhausted. And it was a new toddlers group. I'd never been before. And I spoke to, you know, a wee group of mums trying to get to know them. And I was just saying, you know, I'm really tired. And, you know, Jessica's up during the night. And David was in the middle of fighting with somebody. And it was just awful. And this mum went, oh, I just love being up in the night with them. It's our time, to, you know, just my time to be with them. Well, I didn't know whether to slap her or cry or what to do, and I just thought, whatever. I am the worst mother in the world, and I ended up in tears the whole way home. So do be honest. Yeah, if your child's perfect, choose your moment when to tell everybody how perfect they are. So second of all, leading on very, very quickly, ask for help and seek advice. And again, back to, you know, I was thinking, I did a parenting course, a few of us went, and we did a parenting course there recently. And I kind of sat thinking, why have I waited until David's 11 before I actually go to these things and start learning how to, you know, all these wee bits of advice and all these tips? And I thought, I trained to look after other people's children. Like, I kind of thought, how many of us have spent years in university or whatever training to be who we are in our professions, and yet we blindly bring our children up when there's people out there who have advice, who have help. So yeah, seek advice. Ask for help. Ask your parents. You know, if you have a mum or, you know, granny, granddad, auntie's uncle, ask for help. There's no shame in it, because you know what? The super mum and the super dad definitely doesn't exist, and neither does the super person. It really, really is the toughest job in the world. So do seek advice, read books, go to every parenting course you can go to it, and just try and be there for your kids. I'm kind of, I have two more, and I'm very, very quickly. Learn to get used to being embarrassed. You know, those embarrassing moments when your child is having that tantrum, get through that embarrassment and don't give in, and you'll win that battle. But just learn to live in a constant state of embarrassment for a few years when your child is just one after the other asking questions. Like, David is the worst, even still at talking to people at tills and coming out with the random things. One very quick story. We were at a crepe van at Ulster Rugby thing, a wee canopy shading about 50 people from bouncing rain. Now, and this was only a couple of years ago, and we're all snuggled in, really uncomfortable because we're all strangers like this. And David says to the guy behind the thing, "Your hair is so cool. What gel do you use?" And I just went, and like, so that's way beyond toddler stage. And I was so, I went red. The guy behind the counter went red while all his mates were winding him up. And I just thought, seriously? So yeah, just get into that. Learn to be completely embarrassed all the time. And very, very quickly, just do your best. Do what you can. Just do whatever you need to do to get your children through this stage. What works for one child is not going to work for another child. What works for one parent is I wouldn't do that, and I was one of those before I had my children. You do know what? Whatever works for you and whatever works for your child, your wee individual child that God has given you, like, these really are precious, precious gifts. Now, I don't always say that, but they are precious gifts that God has given to us when they're tucked up in bed, safe and sound, looking sweet. And yeah, just do what you can. Do your best, because do you know what? That's all really we can do to get us through this.
Thank you. Yeah, as I said, Julie looks after our mothers and others group that meets on Friday. If you're interested in finding out more about that group, it allows, you know, those toddlers to play with each other, but it allows you company as well, and a space where you can have some of these conversations that Julie said can be so helpful and valuable. Also, we've talked before about trying to get a little group together to maybe do a little parenting course or a little DVD course. If you're interested in that, again, please do talk to Julie and let her know. And if we have a few people that are interested, we'll maybe try and put something together. Now, we thought about the toddlers, and I watched Sarah the whole way through, and we kind of did that look, you know, where you raise the eyebrows and, you know, we're right there. Potty training? Oh, yeah. We're in it. Yeah, we're up to our elbows in it. Yeah, and everything else that was mentioned too. But the next stage that comes is the primary stage. And Suzanne just does a lot of work secularly helping those who are vulnerable and spending time with them. And she helps and looks after her, keeps us all right with our child protection at the church. And I'm so glad we have somebody who is detailed and just conscientious, just helping us as a church to continue to with our leadership and those who are working with the different groups to just keep having the conversations that we need to have. We want to be diligent in those things. But she also looks after our Upward Bound group that meets. There's her and a little team of leaders that each Wednesday night really work with primary aged children. And so I wanted to ask Suzanne to come up and share with us as well.
Thank you. I feel as if I should have my book of flashcards. Amanda, go and get me a wee book, which it don't matter what it is. I feel as if I should hold a wee book of flashcards here. Okay, well, a bit like Julie, I feel really as if I'm not the person to be doing this talk tonight. I'm Suzanne. I'm married to Mark. Those of you who don't know me, I have two children who have now passed the primary school age, who are now at secondary school, who are both studying for exams at the moment. I'm also a speech and language therapist is my day job, working with children with learning disability and especially those with challenging behaviour, autistic spectrum disorder, all of that kind of thing in and out of behaviour units, and working in a specialist hospital for people with learning disability. So again, a bit like Julie was saying, you think perhaps I might know a thing or two about behaviour, but sometimes I come home from work, perhaps having been in one of the secure units, which is a unit which would be locked because, you know, that the individuals there, you know, are having such, their behaviour provides such a challenge. And my own two children are worse than the people that I have, the children that I have left. And you're thinking, hang on a minute here, what's going on? You know, they're giving you more challenges. But anyway, Andrew has asked me just to talk a little bit about primary school age children. And he again, yes, asked me, as he asked Julie, to share sort of a few things and to think about three main points. I don't know what it is about pastors and three, the number three. They all like things in threes, not it. But anyway, I have a few wee things here, and it was hard to know exactly where to start and what to say to you. But I suppose I was thinking about Upward Bound and the children who come here on a Wednesday night. And I just brought this wee picture. We made a picture for Andrew actually as a gift this year in Upward Bound. And this is just a wee small copy of it. And it was all their wee fingerprints. We got them all to do a wee fingerprint and we made it into a tree and we gave it to Andrew as a wee gift. And I'm just showing you that wee picture because it's really, really hard to remember just how precious and how special, you know, all of the children are. And sometimes when they're in here on a Wednesday night and they're all running around mad, not that we allow that, isn't that right, Amanda? We don't allow running around mad. But we try not to allow run around mad. And I'm cracking up and Amanda's trying to mark them in. You know, it is sometimes very hard to remember how special and how precious they are. And that's why, you know, I got this wee picture put onto a gift for each of the leaders because I do think, and even as parents, I think that can be something just to have maybe something like that stuck up. Just to remember how special and how precious, you know, your children are. I truly believe my children are a gift and the children who come to Upward Bound are special and precious as well. Each one of them different. Each one of their fingerprints different. You can probably spot the ones who are the troublemakers because their fingerprints are all squashed all over the place. And poor Amy Crummy ended up with green paint all over her jacket that night, didn't she? Bless her. But anyway, so I suppose that's the thing just to remember to have in the back of your mind. And I know that's really, really difficult whenever you're having a hard day and whenever things are tough. But you know, children are a gift from God and, you know, it is God who is working, who can work through their wee lives. Each one of them special, each one of them different. And a different, as Julie has said, a different approach, is needed with each of them. Even my own two children, the way I would work with one of them, would not work with the other one. Just they're so different. And so their reactions are so different and it just needs a really different approach. So just to remember that, you know, one size doesn't fit all. So I suppose the three things then that Andrew asked me to share, three things, and it was really, really hard to know where to start. But I suppose what I have loads of books on children and parenting and behaviour and all that kind of thing. And I would love to say to you, oh, there's one book that's brilliant, go out and buy it. But unfortunately, there's not one book that's brilliant. There are lots of books that are really, really good. but there's not one book that has all the answers. But the one thing, I suppose, that I tried to keep in my head, and someone very wise said to me, you know, once, was that, you know, it said in the Bible about Jesus when he was growing up. It doesn't tell us very much about his early years. But Luke 2:52 says, Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favour with God and man. So we just wanted to think of those three things and maybe give you some examples, you know, of those. So the first thing was, it said Jesus grew in wisdom. So I suppose as a parent, that's the one thing I would say, you know, obviously we want to encourage our children at school and we want to encourage them, you know, academically. I have a girl at home tonight who's working really hard for exams. I have a boy who should be at home working hard for exams, who is off playing football somewhere. But, you know, we obviously want to try and encourage academic learning, and we want to try and, you know, do the best we can to help them. And as well as that, I think it's really good as a parent to try and help them to discover their strengths and their weaknesses and to try and discover their gifts. You know, when Andrew was wee, I encouraged him, shall we say, very strongly encouraged him to take music lessons, and he would be very keen to tell you how much he detested that. I did keep it going for quite a few years because he actually was quite good, but he was just having none of it, and it really isn't his gift, you know. So I think that's the thing as a parent. It's really good to give them opportunities and to try and to really help them to try and discover their gift and to try and discover, you know, really what God has for them. So, you know, I think that is something really, really important. But sometimes, I suppose the one thing I have seen with my own children as well is, you know, you're very keen to encourage them at school and very keen to encourage them academically and to do well. But sometimes things don't work out the way you want them to work out. And I know for me that's something I would have found quite difficult as a mum, because I like things being organised and I am a bit of a planner. Mark would probably say I'm a bit of a control freak. Possibly I am. And that's very hard if things don't go your way. And, you know, letting God have his plan and have his way, you know, can be difficult. And I know, you know, even coming up to, you know, that sort of P7 stage, the whole transfer of school, you know, I know that's something that can cause a lot of stress for people. And I know, you know, in our house at the time when Andrew was, he was the first to do the new system, you know, and that was something that we did find very difficult. But, you know, that was the one thing I really learned through that, was that God was in control of that. God had a plan. And I have to say, Andrew would put me to shame, because he was completely chilled, as he always is, about the whole thing. And I remember him getting that letter on that morning. And I, of course, had stood outside the post office for an hour and a half in the rain to get the letter, because I was so anxious about it, which I know I shouldn't have been. But I just thought, well, I'll go and get it, and then I'll deal with how I feel, and then we'll let him find out how he's got on. And he just got up, came down in his pyjamas. Oh yeah, well, I thought I'd be going to that school anyway, Mum. So that was just that. And there was, you know, what were you worried about kind of thing. So, you know, God is in control and God has a plan, and things maybe don't always go the way we want them to go. And I suppose I would see a lot of parents whose children have a learning disability, who maybe have had, you know, a diagnosis of maybe autistic spectrum disorder, would be the place where I would very often end up. And maybe with, you know, given that diagnosis. And those parents find that very, very difficult, understandably so. You know, that is something that can be very, very, very difficult news to receive about your child. But sometimes, you know, again, as has been said earlier in the week, at other nights, you know, God has a plan, and God uses situations like that to show us things and to teach us things. And I remember a lovely, lovely Christian lady who has a child with a learning disability, she's an adult now, said to me, you know, once that she thought God should put a child with a learning disability in every family, because it taught all the other brothers and sisters, you know, skills and how to share and how to be patient and how to be kind, and it taught them skills that they wouldn't have always had. So God definitely uses, you know, uses situations like that and brings them together for his good, as he has said. You know, I love that verse. God has a plan, and it may not be our plan, but it's his plan, and it's a perfect plan. So that was wisdom. The next thing then I had was stature. It said about Jesus growing in stature. And so I suppose, you know, I was thinking about that. What does that mean? And obviously it means to grow taller, and we're all tall in our house, as you know. which I'm not suggesting that's what you should all do, but I have no control over that. But obviously, we are just so perfect. No, I don't mean that. But, you know, even helping your child to grow, you know, physically, you know, I see parents who, you know, and it does amaze me, who don't make the children go to bed. And I know that sounds ridiculous. You know, who'll say to me, oh, but he didn't want to go to bed. And you sort of think, well, okay then, but, you know, that needs to happen, you know. And even Ross, I think, said last night about just how important sleep was and how that was so detrimental in the decline of his health. Sometimes all of the time, actually, when our children are small, we are responsible for their growth, and we have to put our foot down and we have to set rules and set boundaries. And that can be really, really hard as a parent. And I know it's really hard, and I would see a lot of parents who really, really struggle with that. I suppose the children I see are children who are having real difficulties. But I do think that that is really, really important. So I would just say to you, you know, don't be afraid to set boundaries, to set rules, to have schedules, to have timetables. I'm the queen of timetables and schedules and all of that. I love making them, colouring them in, having pictures on them, all the rest of it. I just think it's really, really valuable. Children need to know boundaries. And if children don't have boundaries, you know, I would see with our wee ones with a learning disability, who maybe don't always understand, you know, what a boundary means, they then push against that. And if they push against that when they're wee and they're five and they're six and they're seven, well, you can work with that. But when they push against that, if they haven't had boundaries put in when they're little, and they push against that when they're 15, 16, that's when you really have problems. And that's what I would see. So that would be my second thing, just to say to you, don't be afraid to, you know, to be, there's times when you have to be strict, and there's times when there have to be boundaries, there's times when there have to be rules, and the rules have to be just followed, and that's just it. You know, bed needs to be a certain time, dinner needs to be eaten at a certain time, and that's just it. Sometimes there's just not the room for negotiation, and I would very often say in our house, sorry, it's not up for negotiation. You know, the complaints department is closed. Sorry, the end. So the complaints department is closed, definitely. Tonight. Okay. So the last thing, the final thing I had then was, I said about Jesus grew in favour with God and man. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, you know, what practically can I say about that? And obviously that meant, you know, Jesus grew up and, God was pleased with him. And, you know, I suppose upward bound, we would see the children coming in every Wednesday night, and, you know, we would sometimes see children who haven't learnt memory verses, who, you know, we do this colouring in sheet, and children don't do their colouring in sheet. There's lots of things there. Don't leave it all to your Sunday school teachers or the leaders of the organisations. You know, it's up to you as a parent as well to teach your children about the Lord, and to teach him about, you know, Bible stories, and to teach them things like that. Don't leave it all to us. And also, you know, work with the opportunities that you're being given. Work Sunday school teachers and all the rest of it, memory verses and all of that, you know, that's really, really good. Take full advantage of that. And maybe if there's a certain story or lessons that we're working through, maybe an upward bound, you know, maybe you can go over that as well, or, you know, do it from a different Bible, a different story Bible or something, with different pictures, and reinforce it. You know, use those opportunities. That's what I would say. And I know that's something that I would have done with my own children. And especially, you know, I remember, Carolyn especially, you know, give her life to the Lord around Easter time. And it was the Easter story. And I think everywhere she went, you know, GB, the Bible class, Sunday school, you know, the Bible club that she went to, it was the Easter story, because it was topical and seasonal, you know, obviously. And I think maybe I'd bought her wee Easter books, and there were different wee things. So she was hearing the same story over and over and over again. And that's what children need. They need repetition, and they need to hear it over and over. Don't think because you've heard the story once, you know, we'll not read it again. They're not like you or I that don't need a story read. You know, if you read it once, you can take it in. They need repetition, and they need to hear it over and over. So don't be afraid to do that, and work with, you know, whatever's going on in their lives at that particular time. And the last thing then was, you know, it says about Jesus grew in favour with God and also with man. And, you know, Jesus then, you know, he obviously became, you know, he friendships were important, and people got on with him. And I'm just so grateful to, you know, the church, and to people in the church, you know, my own children, the friendships that they have, they're just so, so valuable to them. You know, they just can't wait to get in here on a Sunday and, you know, meet up with their friends and, you know, they go out with them all sorts of different times. And I just think as well, don't underestimate that. I know, you know, my children are a little bit older now as teenagers, but I was thinking back to when they were wee and, you know, that was something that we would have encouraged. So I would say to you, encourage Christian friendships, even when they're small. I do remember Carolyn and all those wee girls that age, and they all used and colour in. I don't know if, Jim, do you remember? They all had all these colouring books, and we used to call them the colouring club because they were all so wee, and they all had their pens and pencils across the whole length of the seats. But, you know, those wee girls have now come on to be great friends, and, you know, that has really strengthened their Christian faith, just having friends like that. So, gosh, this is going funny. So that's really all I had to say. Hopefully that's of use. I definitely am not any kind of an expert, but hopefully that's been helpful. Thank you.
That was very helpful. And again, you know, I think we've repeated it quite a few times tonight. You know, what works for one child doesn't necessarily work for the others. And what we're really offering at this part, anyway, is ideas and suggestions. And I think it gets more and more confusing as they kids get older and older. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about teenagers. And I've got three people I want to bring up. And I could have picked a lot of different people for this particular one. I picked three people who... just through talking to them and getting to know them a little bit, I just feel they're very, very honest, and they're working hard and they're working thoughtfully with their own teenagers, and they have things I think that we will benefit from as we talk to them tonight. But also, I just think, you know, they're also quite open in telling us where they're struggling too. And so I want to ask Stephen, who looks after our youth club, yeah, he has his own kids too, to come up. I want to ask Joyce to come up. And Joyce works with Mothers and Others Group, and some people may know her from there. But again, has her own herd as well. And then I want to ask David Martin. David's secretary at the church here, but he's a group of kids that are just, I suppose, in their 20s now. But again, children who we love and appreciate, but I think just hearing from some of these ones about some questions will be of benefit to us now. We'll just kind of pass this around and, you know, sift your wisdom and, you know, see what we can find. But we'll start with Stephen. Going from primary school to secondary school, what's the biggest change between the two stages?
For anybody who doesn't know me, obviously I'm Stephen. I've three children. Jessica, who's 14, and just in her early teenagers years, and Adam, who's 11. Really, I think I have my notes, which were authorised by Karen, by the way. really, I think from our perspective, the biggest change that we see between primary school and secondary school is the quest for independence. All of a sudden, the kids have been, you've been controlling them to a certain degree and trying to keep them in a straight line. All of a sudden now they're bigger, they're introduced to older people, and they're developing themselves, and they want to try and get their own independence and try and push the boundaries, probably to a certain degree as well. It's really hard as a parent to let that go, that control that you have, let it go a wee bit, and try and let them build their way in life. I think Karen and I have sort of took an attitude over, especially with Jessica, in the first couple of years, where the president first year in Wallace, we were sort of going, let's let her make her mistakes maybe now, while we still have a good control. Don't want to sound like a control freak, but we can let her make a mistake in a safe environment, and hopefully learn from that, rather than letting their controller the whole way up through first, second, third year, and then maybe let reins go at that point whenever she hasn't learned the skills to be able to handle that. So hopefully we're trying to teach her that, yes, you first exams come along, we think you should be doing this much revision. She's saying, no, I'm doing enough. I'm going, no, you're not. And then we thought, no, let's back off. Let's let her make her own judgment call. And if she fluffs up her first January exams, not a big deal. Better now than GCSEs. And of course, I put my hand up. I was wrong. She came through the exams very well and she just went, Daddy, told you so. But we let her do her bit in a safe environment at a time where she had time to, if she made a mistake, to recover and hopefully learn from it. And I think that's really the biggest thing that we're finding is that change, that independence. And all of a sudden realizing that you don't know their friends. Karen obviously knows the mummies from primary school. She knows a lot of them all. So as you all mums know, from primary school, you stand and talk. Dads, we're off and work, so we don't get a lot of fun. You just get to know the parents, so you know the children, and you're comfortable, yes, off you go. All of a sudden, you're coming back and going, Daddy, I want to go into town with so-and-so. And you're going, who's that? Okay. Okay. Karen? You know, but I think that's the biggest thing, is you have to trust them, and they also have to earn that trust, and it's just trying to build that up.
He had two boys, 22 and
20, and girl, 19.
Yeah, I suppose at primary school age up until 11, I suppose they're much in your care all the time. You sort of have control over them in a nice sort of way. They are dependent on you, you know, for everything, transport, everything. In that sort of way, you know, you always know where they are, you know, especially at early age, if they're in bed. You know, they're not out, you know. I think when it comes to, especially when it starts secondary school or grammar school, I suppose I think like most parents, you fear for safety. Are they going to be kidnapped out there? Are they going to get knocked down? That sort of thing. Those are sort of fears that I have. I suppose being a worrying person. I tell a story. When I told this to John about 2 years ago, when I hope Julie's listening. Whenever John first started dentist, I suppose up until then, again, like most children nowadays, lifted to school, picked up at school, etc. And he had to get the train on his own, so heading down into Belfast from Lisburn on his own. So I suppose a fear, yeah, of that. He got on the train, and some mornings the first few mornings I had left him down the train station and went on, or so he thought, but I sort of hung around to make sure he got on the train. One particular morning I remember just he was sitting down in the wee bay down there at Lambeg station, and there was a dodgy looking character, and I left him off and sort of hung around a bit, you know. But so I suppose that you have a fear, you know, your children, but it's only then you have to let go. You know, ice up a bit and let go. And I think that's really when your fears have to go, and your dependence on God. I think just at that stage, I think when they go out at that age, really that's when I think your faith is tested. And I think you just have to let go in that way. I think, yeah, like all the fears you have them, yeah, all the things that could happen to them, probably will never happen. But I think without being holy and sound, why not? You know, our children were brought up in church here, you know, as best we could, and came to everything, and were saved at an early age, thankfully. I think the biggest concern, probably, fear, you know, that both being brought up in church and saved at a young age, you know, that they just weren't coming here just trying, you know, to please us or please people, and then, you know, sort of just that their faith was real. And I think just, especially when they go into secondary school, you know, I'm more pressure on them, you know, the end of sport or anything or different things, you know, it is hard out there. And I think the biggest fear was just they stayed, you know, once they got away out of the house a bit, that their faith would remain. And thankfully, so far that has stayed.
Well, I'm not going to give you a biology lesson. I don't know if all boys
the way my 16-year-old behaves, and if all girls like my 16-year-old or my 13-year-old daughter does. But I would say, certainly in our house, the boy's very different from the girl. I hate to burst Julie's bubble, but Dawson was a difficult toddler, young child, ran everywhere. He's been reasonably okay as a teenager. Abby was my compliant daughter, who was lovely and good. And I'm finding her harder as a teenager. She cries a lot. There's a lot of hormones going on, and I'm not a crier, as my friends know. And I'm just not so good at coping with that. So certainly but like has been said earlier, every child is different. There will be boys who are a nightmare. There will be girls who are brilliant through their teenage years. I think you've got to know your child. You've got to change as they change and change your approach as they develop and grow up. And just seek advice from others and adapt as a parent as they keep changing. Certainly I would say the hormone changes in teenage girls is hard for them to cope with. They cry and they don't even know why they're crying, and there's no point in asking because they haven't got a clue. So you just got to be patient and help them.
You're a dad with a teenage daughter. That's coming, thankfully, way down the line for me. But how do you feel as a dad with a teenage daughter?
Same way I do it, Karen, very carefully. you pick your moments. as a dad with a teenage daughter, It does be a challenge, because obviously I don't understand what's going through the female mind. I've been trying for years with Karen, I feel miserably, so I've absolutely no chance with my daughter. As Joyce has said, Jessica was like 11 and 12. She was hard to work. She was a very strong-willed, independent little girl. And the hormones kicked in, it was 10 times worse. She really very strong and very single-minded, and she'll try to do. I think for me as a dad with a teenage girl, I've always tried to find a sort of common ground with her and try and spend time with her. Obviously as a dad, you have all the pressures of work, and you come into the door, you sit down at the dinner table with, at the minute I sit down, everybody else needs to get up and going. So you only have a short window with them. So I try and spend time with them. And last night we sat and watched Toddlers with Tiaras. You know, about beauty pageants for little girls this size. What do I know about that? But it was time. We spent half an hour. We were talking about it. Jessica was going, why would you dress a girl up like that at that age? They have to be wee girls. And I'm going, yes, you're right. They have to be wee girls. You know, and he's trying to spend time with her. And even our dishwasher broke a few weeks ago. And now we're spending time washing dishes. And that 10 minutes has become very precious to me, both with Jessica and with Adam. Because you're standing there washing dishes, listening to her talk away about her day, and I have no idea generally what she's talking about. But I'm nodding my head and going, okay. And just talking about this person, that person. And it's just communication is running and moving. And I find that's really good. And we do try and spend time with her. And sometimes all you get is that's it. And you go, okay, that's good, thank you. I take that. And other days, we went for a drive last Saturday. I wanted to go up the Mourns, and Dave was going to go with me, then he couldn't with the funeral. And Jessica just said, I'll go with you. So I didn't have to ask twice. I went, okay, let's go. So packed ourselves off that morning, jumped in the car, and she talked the whole way down the road. The whole way up the half hour, 3/4 an hour up in the Mourns, and the whole way back down again. And I have to say, as a dad, as things like that are, I find very, I don't know what you would call it, encouraging or whatever. I know that time will end. At some point in time where your daughter won't want to be with you, she'll want to be out with her friends and everybody else. So I'm just taking that now as a very precious time and try and take the half hour out for the night time to come home from work and spend time with her. And it doesn't always work. Normally she's straight upstairs in the bedroom under the pretense of revising or doing homeworks. But if you get a chance, I try to spend time with her and find that common ground.
like Stephen said, trying to find some kind of common ground and picking your times. We're all different. We'll all have times in the day when we're better at talking. You know, there are a lot of people aren't great first thing in the morning, so there's not much point in trying to have an in-depth conversation with them. unless a couple of coffees have been consumed. So trying to find time, like Stephen said, you were talking about dishes, I find when I'm driving, doing the pickups, and I remember someone else in church saying, you know, as much as it's a nightmare having to do that YF pickup at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, or BB runs, or picking them up from friends' houses, at least you're sitting in the car with them, and you can have a chat, you can find out, and that's probably the time they're most likely to chat, because they've been with their friends, and they're a bit more sociable. I do think, and I've heard others say this, that teenage boys go through a stage of really not wanting to talk a lot, kind of around 13, 14, 15, and then they come out the other side. And my sister actually said recently, she was home from Australia, the last time she spent time with Dawson, it was a nod and a yes and a no, and that was it. And this last year, whenever she was home, she actually had a conversation with him where she found out what he was interested in and what he was doing. So you may have a grunting stage, but I think that hopefully passes and they come out the other side. But you do need to try and keep communicating with them. Otherwise, you will lose contact with what their world is like and what they're going through. So I think car journeys and pickups, as much as you might not like doing them, are important.
I suppose, like, again, most families you hear in the car or whatever, he's touching me. Give it back. Dad, he's annoying me. He's breathing too loud. Those are all the things I do hear. And sometimes, yeah, they do go on and get whenever they're bored, I think. So I think it's always good to try and keep them occupied. You know, if they're sitting at home, you're letting them sleeping, you know, they are going to, I think, fight among each other. So good, keep them occupied. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, I think we saying was one time. A lot of down to the personalities, I think, too. We had the pleasure, kids were all close together, you know, in age. So I remember as a child growing up, my brother would be 7 years older than me. Vast difference, you know, and, you know, sort of, yeah, made some hard, you know, times are, with being 7 years older is always sort of bullied, but, a wee bit, but, I think it's all down. I think sometimes, as with sibling rivalry is good, you know, if they do have a bit of a roll about the floor, it doesn't get too out of hand. I think that's good. I think it, helps them maybe later on in life to stand up for themselves, or, you know, just, rather, you know what I'm trying to say, rather, yeah, as long as it doesn't get out of hand. But, I know you did with, your brother. Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, sometimes you have to intervene, sometimes you have to sit back and just, yeah, watch it, let them try and sort out their own, wee small issues sometimes. Don't show, a favouritism, I think, is a key thing. Well, treat them all the same, you know, whatever gift they get, try and, it's an equal value, or don't make one out of better than the other, I think, you know, always try and avoid jealousy, with them. I think do things as a family together. I think it's a great thing, you know, Saturday, spend time together, I think, go away on holiday together, as long as, you know, you can, as possible. Make the most appeal, of meal times, I think, togetherness, you know, at the meal, I think that's sometimes the most important part of the day. Sometimes maybe the only part of the day you'll get together, for once tea time goes either out to BB, GB, or whatever, or up studying in the room, and, I think those times are, important. I suppose just how you get on with your spouse as well, I think, you know, try not, you know, just too many arguments in front of them. You know, sometimes a great thing, a monkey see, monkey do. You know, if they see you fighting they will, you know. So I think trying, hard as it is sometimes, try and set a good example in front of them. Yeah, the old saying, you can choose your friends, can choose your family. But, yeah, so some of the friends you will like, some, won't. And again, I was trying to encourage them if they are with wrong friends, just try to be diplomatic about it in a nice way. Not just telling you're not friendly with him anymore, you know, just blunting yourself, but just try and encourage them to see why they shouldn't be friendly with that person, if it's having a bad influence on them, especially. I think encourage them to make a Christian friends and non-Christian. I think it's one of the dangers, so encouragement, they want Christian company, but when they're going to talk to a non-Christian, they can't. And, or inviting something along in the church, so they don't have any non-Christian friends, and they can't invite them to anything. You know, so it's good to, keep the balance. As long as you let them know, you know, that the non-Christian isn't there to drag them down, or won't drag them down, and keep an eye, you know, on that. Maybe just try always to give them advice. Again, as nicely as possible, sometimes, whether they like it or not. I think if they know your opinion, hopefully it'll into the head and stay in the head. But again, I think just the key is just, if they do have good friends, encourage it. You know, bring them into the house and, yeah, be friendly to them as they are to them too. So.
Well, I have a few tips that my husband primarily has provided, but there are things that we do within our house. As you say, you know, our kids live online now. If we wanted to talk to our friend, you had to sit in the hallway, and you were doing well if you got more than 15 minutes to chat to them, whereas I can walk into my daughter's room and her friend is sitting there on the screen during the evening. We have a rule in our house that you always can have access to their devices. So if I say, can I have a look at your phone? They have to give you their phone so that you can have a look at what they've been looking at and what's going on. And they know that rule. And equally, if there's any argument, then the device is taken off them for a period of time. We also have BT home filters set up so that there are a lot of websites they can't access. There are a lot of things they can't search for. You would never go out and buy your son a pornographic magazine. But if you don't have any filters there, he is perfectly free to search for whatever he wants to, or accidentally click on something by going to some other site that he was innocently looking for. We also have one iTunes account because we got caught out a few times with separate iTunes accounts being set up and some people buying in-app purchases and buying extra coins or extra whatever for whatever game they were playing, and suddenly there's like 15 quid coming off the account and you're like, who bought that? What was that for? So everything now is on one account and they have to ask if they want to download an app. Even if it's free, they still have to come and ask so that we know what they're buying, we know what they're playing, what they're doing. We also have the rule that all devices come to one point to be charged at night. Kids have no self-control. Adults have very little self-control when it comes to sitting online at night time. And we've talked earlier about getting to bed and having rules and things. You know, their phones, their iPads, everything has to come to a central point to be charged at night. So it's not in the bedroom. It's not somewhere that they can end up online all night and caught up in a game or caught up watching a video and losing track of time. So that's essential. It is something that all parents need to have discussions as to whether they will let their kids have devices in their bedrooms or not. They will let their kids, you know, have certain number of hours per day where they have access. And I think whenever they're tiny, that's even more important, because nowadays, like Vicky was saying, her one-year-old can watch a video if he wants to on her phone. You know, they live in a world where it's so easy to spend time online. So we are, as Suzanne said, we are the ones who have to be responsible. We have to set the boundaries and the rules. And they have no sense whenever it comes to how much time they spend doing those things. And with our teenagers, it's equally important. And then finally, we have on our kids' phones the Find My iPhone app or function, which is useful if you lose your phone. It's also useful to know where your children are. So if they have their phone with them and they've said they've gone to play football, you can check and make sure that they are playing football or they're at that place anyway, or the phone's at that place anyway. So it's a useful way of, you know, keeping track and finding. Dawson did lose his phone once in Wallace Park, so it's useful. We got the phone back because it had dropped out of his pocket. He wasn't aware of it, and we got the phone back because we were able to track it. So things like that are always useful. But as parents, you've got to try and keep up to date. And it's an entirely different world to when we were growing up. So find that friend or find that young adult who knows about things if you don't, and get them to give you a bit of a crash course. Google it. If you, you know, find a YouTube video that teaches you how to set up the filters or whatever. It's the way you learn now.
Stephen, maybe one more question. Is on those days where it gets worse and worse, rather than, you have them every three and everything's made right, the days where it just seems your teenager is getting more grumpy rather than better, how do you respond to doing that?
Depends what mood I'm in. That's the hardest one, because they obviously look to us and watch what we do, and that's how we respond back to them, is the action that comes back at us. We can nearly be a mirror, or they can be a mirror of us. And I think the first thing is just try to keep calm. And it is the hardest thing in the world. You walk through the door after a hard day at work, because we all have hard days at work, of course. You sit down and people start bickering and just going, quiet. And they keep on going, you go, quiet. And they keep on going. And the next thing is you just explode. And you have to think, is that really the right way to go down? It's the hardest thing, is trying to keep calm. And sometimes it is just, you have to just nearly walk away and let that tension diffuse. Because at the end of the day, a teenager's mind is not wired the same as ours. And they're not thinking things the same way we think it. They don't be rational to the same extent, because their minds are still developing. They're still trying to find their way in the social graces, and how we are expecting a reaction will not be what you'll get. And then we get cross because it's not what we're expecting. In the meantime, they're going, but I'm telling you what I'm feeling, but we're not listening. So it's really trying to do that. And then sometimes you just have to do the daddy bit and read the Riot Act and lay down the law of what's happening, how it's going to happen, and when it's going to happen. And then the tears start. And then it's that you don't love me sort of attitude. But it's trying to lay down they find their place in life, but you don't do it such a way that it brings them down to a very low level. They have to try and understand that, yes, you've been feeling a certain way, but it's okay to feel that way, but you can't react in the way you were reacting there. And sometimes you just have to cut it off, and it does be helpful, but try and don't walk away from the situation then, that's it. They're in tears, you walk out in a huff, because you got all across too. It's then give them 5 minutes and go back in and sit down with them and go, here's why we end up having the argument we end up having. And you're trying to explain to them a wee bit of what the reaction that they had was unacceptable, for want of a better expression, because at the end of the day, it's better that they react in our house or in your houses and they learn from the mistakes there than doing it out and about. And they're 15, 16, 17 year olds with very little social graces and difficulties then that'll bring along in university and on through. It is the hardest thing as well. People have older children than I have, and it is the hardest thing is to keep calm and try and temper that situation that's bubbling. And sometimes I make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And it's being big enough then to a child and saying to them, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I was bad day at work. Forgive me. And I think it's very important that we do that as parents. If we do explode because we're tired, because we're grumpy, that we do go and be seen and apologise to them. For that sets the example again for them, that hopefully if they explode because they're tired, they're grumpy, they'll go, oh, that wasn't right. Sorry, Daddy. Sorry, Mum. You know, I think it's a very hard one, but I think let's try to keep calm.
Very helpful. Well, as I say, there's other things we could have talked about, and maybe you have other questions. Come and talk to some of these ones or other people that are here, and we'll be only too happy to, well, I'll point you to one of them that will give you an answer that's helpful. But we do want to get Jeff up. Jeff has some help for us as well, and I'll ask Jeff to come and speak to us just as we come towards the end. So, Jeff, you come up.
Come on. Okay. Okay. Might lower this a bit. So, it's a big person who's using this before. It's better now. Okay, for those of you that don't know you, and I know most of you probably do, my name's Jeff Logan. I'm going to introduce you to Team Logan here before we begin. Beth, she's way out. She knew that was coming. Andrew had asked me to speak on the most important things you give your children. Okay, now, he didn't give me three. He didn't tell me how many there were going to be. But I've picked a five of them here tonight. But first of all, for those of you that don't know, I'll bring them up. Okay. That's the... Most of you will know Hannah on the left-hand side. The left-hand side, yes. The one with the dark hair. Hannah, she's 20. And then Rachel, the one beside her, is 14, yes. She's 14, and you're getting in trouble with this. She's 13. Beth is 19. Gillian is the one in the yellow cardigan. And Philip here is 16. Philip is... a lot taller than that, actually. He sort of slumped down, and I'm not quite sure where he came from, because he definitely doesn't get the height off me, but that is them. They weren't always that size, but... That was Philip. He'd have been about maybe two. That's Beth, about the same age. That's Rachel. That's Hannah. That's Gillian. Whenever she was around that age as well. So, it's quite funny there because Julie was talking about that, having, you know, done all the qualifications, and Suzanne was the same about, you know, childcare and, about that preparing for you, or that didn't really prepare you for it. Well, I've done 25 years in the RUC. That's the Royal Ulster Constabulary and the PSNI. And that's involved things like crowd control, being cross-examined in court, bulletproof vests and all those kinds of things. And it didn't really prepare me for all of this here either. So to be honest with you, it doesn't, I don't think anything really prepares you, for all that goes with parenthood. Somebody said to me one time, rearing children is a bit like holding on to a bar of soap. If you grip it too tight, it'll slip out of your hands. And if you don't grip it tight enough, it'll slip out of your hands. I think that's probably very, very true. There's a balance to be got whenever you're trying to discipline your children, whenever you're trying to rear them, when you're making all kinds of decisions that there are to do with them. But before I go on with that, look, I just want to qualify a couple of things here. I am no childcare or child rearing expert. Far from it. I don't have all the answers. And we have made loads of mistakes and done loads of things that we wish we had done better or different. As the kids have been growing up, we have been really, really fortunate, and God has been good to us. We have four healthy, good children, and they have caused us no bother so far. They've been quite good, and I just pray that there continues. But you know, there does come a point with your children where they make their own decisions in life, and there's nothing you can do about that. You can take them as far as you can take them. After that, they make their own decisions, and sometimes we just have to live with that. The third thing I would say is this, that we really don't attribute anything that is good in our family to anyone other than God and to what he has done in our lives and in the lives of our children. And also the power of prayer is something I believe has had a big, a massive influence on our family. And I'll talk a wee bit about that there later on. Andrew asked me, as I say, to talk about the most important things that we give to our kids. And I actually found that quite difficult because it's a big, big, big subject about what sometimes what you give and what you don't give to them. You can talk all night about it. It was funny even there, you know, we had the three stages that you were talking about. You know, you have the newborn and then you have the toddler and then you go to the primary school years and then you go to the teenagers after that. And we were just joking about this in the house the other night and I was saying, you know, I think the difference between a toddler and a teenager is you can put the toddler under your arm and carry them out of Marks and Spencer's when they misbehave, but you can't do that with a teenager. Actually, I've got to the point now that Philip can actually lift me and take me out of the room, and he has done that. So it all kind of flips around. So at that point, you sort of hope you've built enough of a relationship with him that it's done in fun and not in actually aggression, where he just takes you and he lifts you and takes you out of the room. So, but for Gillian and me, I would say that as parents, everything that we have done in rearing our children has been framed by two things. The first is that the most important thing in their life we felt for them was that they'd be saved. And that was from day one. In fact, before day one, before they were born, that is the most important thing. Nothing else really matters apart from that, because that sets eternity. That's where they're going. So that's what really, really matters. And the second thing is that they will grow up to lead, and I say this, a proper Christian life. What I mean is that the Christianity is real, that the Lord is real in their life, that he is the center of everything that they do, that every decision that they will make, everything that they will do in their life, that it will be filtered through him. That's what they will do. And so those, I suppose, were two of the things that we'll do. If you like to take it back to scripture, I mean, you take it back to Proverbs 22 and verse 6, where it says, train up the child in the way that he shall go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And that's, I think, is really, really true. As a parent, you have got this wee piece of clay in your hands. And it is the, I think, the greatest privilege that anybody has. There's a lot of people diss mothers. Mothers, I think, particularly if you're not out there having this huge career, sometimes I think there are, and actually, in fairness, I think sometimes it's other women can be really, really quite unkind about women who devote themselves to their children and to their family and are not out running multi-million pound companies. And there's nothing wrong with that, and that's grand if that's what you want to do. But I think as a mother, you are shaping the future. You have a wee person or wee people in your care. And that is your God-given responsibility to shape them and to make them and prepare them for the next generation, to be the next mothers, to be the next pastor's wives, to be the next whatever it is that they become. And I think that's a massive, massive privilege that you have, but it's a great responsibility, obviously, as well. I think as Christian parents, you need to understand that we have a different set of values. We should have a different set of values, really, from what other people have, maybe that aren't Christians. And if that's the case, you shouldn't, I don't think, really be, it's not saying they're not important, but I mean fixated on stuff like what school they end up in, what the career is going to be, how much money they'll make in that career, all those kinds of things. Those are things, I think, that if you go outside Christian, but I'm not saying outside Christian circles, because unfortunately there are Christians sometimes, you know, that they do get very hung up on this stuff. But I think, in truth, those are transitory things. They're things that come and they're things that they go, and they don't really matter. The things that really, really matter are the things that happen in the heart. Whoops, sorry. The things that happen in the heart and the things that your child's future, you could be, and we all know them, people who have any amount of money, any amount of a big job, any amount of a career, and they sometimes are the most miserable people that you will meet in your life. And I don't mean miserable as in grumpy and all that, but I mean actually sad, because they've been chasing something that they think will give them happiness, and it doesn't. They don't find the happiness. That the only place that you can find that is in life, in the Lord Jesus. That is the only place that you will find that. So I think the big thing for us has always been, whenever you want to teach your children about God, it's really important that you live it in front of them. I can come in here tonight and I can stand up here and I can talk to you, and you really don't know what I do when I go home. And I can really put on a good act when I come to church. That's the truth of it. But if you really want to know what I'm like, talk to Beth. Probably don't talk to Beth. No, I'm joking. Talk to Beth. Talk to Gillian. Talk to Philip. Talk to Rachel. They know me, because you can't hide it whenever you go home. Your people you live with know exactly what you're like. And for us as parents, we can put on an act in this place here and go home and be something different to our children. Your children will read you. They know what you're like whenever you're there. And those, if you like, are probably the best judges, I mean, that we have. Just to give you a wee bit of background, I know most of you all know this here, but Gillian and me come from very, very, very different backgrounds. Geographically, Gillian's family all come from South Armagh, around Bessbrook. Geographically, my family come from the Glens of Antrim, so it's about as far north and as far south as you can go in Northern Ireland. I actually think it's probably why, you know, our children are, I was going to say that they're all right, because basically I got outside the gene pool that has been Collybaggy for, you know, generations. So by marrying somebody from, you know, whose background is South Armagh, there's a good mix of genes. So probably things have, that's probably helped them quite a lot. My family, it's actually very, very big. Well, fairly big. I mean, I have 17 aunts and uncles. Out of those, welcome to Ireland, everybody that's from America. That's not that unusual. In fact, I have one aunt who's a family of six, a family of 15. She's 14 brothers and sisters. So that is the way we were. But out of all of those, I had one Christian aunt and one Christian uncle. That was it. I had no church background. My father, as some of you will know, wasn't a Christian for a long, long time. Neither was my mother. My father did a lot of drinking. He was rarely in the house. Whenever he was there, he would have been very, very opposed to the gospel. In fact, I can actually, and I, to be honest with you, never really set foot inside a church, probably until I was about 16. I remember being at the academy and being in an RE class, and somebody mentioned about a pulpit, and I didn't actually know what a pulpit was. I would have been the first or second year at that stage, because I'd never really been in a church, and I hadn't a clue what that meant. Gillian, on the other hand, come from quite a small family, but this long line of Baptists and brethren. And all her relatives, as I would have struggled to have found a relative of mine that was a Christian, she would actually have struggled to have found one that wasn't. And I remember going down into their house in Ballanderry for the first time. And the thing that really struck me about her mum and dad, George and Gwen, and some of you all know them, is that, and this is still the case, I don't think I have ever heard them say a bad word about anybody in my life. And actually, when I hear them criticising or saying even something, or even with a sort of going, yeah, they're about somebody, there's this big alarm bell goes off in my head right away, because I think, right, well, if George and Gwen aren't that struck on them, there must be something really, really wrong here. They are the most, the best Christians I think I've ever met in my life. They will never say anything about anybody. If they are wronged by somebody, if it was a neighbour coming to borrow the car with the tow bar on it to take cattle to the mart and come back and the tank was empty, and there was a neighbour who did that all the time, George never said a word to him. If he had a neighbour, which he did, who would have been a wee bit hard to work with and made a lot of demands and things not there, George never turned the word on him, never said a thing. The most trusting, gentle person I think I've ever met. And for me, both of them have been a real example of what a Christian should be, of how a Christian could conduct himself. Praying for them was just part of life. It was what they did. Reading their Bible was like reading the paper. It was what they did every single day, and it framed how they conducted their life and what they did with that there. And George, and I know this because he told me it, I know what he does. I mean, every morning when he was out feeding the cattle, what he did was he prayed out loud for all of us and people that he knew while he was feeding the cattle. That's what he did. In fact, he had a wee neighbour called Danny Tallon. Danny was a Catholic, and he owned land on down the road from him, and Danny and him were big, big mates. Danny died there a few years ago of cancer. And there was one morning he was actually standing as he was working, he was praying for Danny, and he looked around and Danny was standing at the door of the shed listening to him while he was praying. That's just the type of man that he was, and I must say that has really influenced us, I think, in the way that we try to be in front of, not in front of the children, but try to be in general. Their priorities were not about money. The priorities were not about career. The priorities were not about a big house. That was not them. Their priorities were about pleasing God and living a life that was right and a life that they knew would honour him in every way. That was it. Now, maybe you're not a Christian here tonight, as I say. I don't know everybody in the room, and you're probably wondering what the Bible has to do with parenting. But the Bible, if you like, is a prism that we see everything through. And it frames how I lead my life and the values that I have. It's a book that we have used to guide us in how we raise our children.
there are stories and guidance and everything given through that book, and it will show you how to react in a given situation. Or sometimes even, you know, if you continue down this line where you will go, I'll give you an example. If you look at overindulging your children, you could end up with an Absalom. That's what you could have. There's any number of examples through that. But it is the Bible that we have taken, that we have tried to use as that. As I say, it was kind of difficult to know how to approach tonight. But I think one of the ways I've thought about this as well is that, you know, family is central to God's plan. Whenever you become a Christian, if you are a Christian, whenever you became a Christian, there are a number of things happen to you like that as you were saved. One of the things that happens to you is a thing called adoption. And that means that God takes you and he makes you part of his family. At that point, you become a child of God. At that point, God becomes your heavenly father. And you can speak to him as you speak to your father. And the word that's used in the Bible to refer how people would speak to God in that way is Abba. Now, if you were Hebrew and you were speaking to your children, Abba means basically as father. It's what a child will use whenever they speak to their earthly father. That's the word that they use. That's the degree of intimacy that you have with God now. But it also gives you an indication how precious the family is to God. The family is the building block of society. It's what God has instituted for us to rear our children in. And so there's that aspect of it, that God has made this. So I'm going to give you five things here that I was thinking about that the Heavenly Father has given to me and therefore that I want to try and pass on to my children. So all of these things, all five of them, and this is really, really important, none of them cost any money. Whether you earn a lot of money, whether you earn no money, it means absolutely nothing in terms of what kind of a parent you will be. Absolutely nothing. You have some of the best parents on this earth have not two pennies to rub together, and some of the worst are absolutely loaded. Taking your child on huge holidays, buying them cars, buying them the latest gear, doing all that there. Not that those things are wrong in themselves, but they do not make you a good parent and they do not make your children happy. Far from it. So what we're going to talk about here tonight, just very, very briefly, are things that you can give your children and that every parent should probably give their children. The first thing is God is my example. So the life that the Lord Jesus lived is the life that I seek to follow and to become more like him. So I need to be an example for my children. My children very often will, and I think this is very, very true, that very often our children, particularly for fathers, will view, their view of God will actually be shaped by what they see in us. So how I behave as the spiritual head of our house, because that's what God has made me, and that's a scary thought, but I'm the spiritual head of that house, and therefore, if you like, I represent God in our house. I am the one that is responsible for the spiritual aspect in our house. Your children, Suzanne was talking there, Suzanne's a speech therapist, and she'll know that whenever children learn to speak, they learn to speak by listening to other people. So if you come from, whatever you say, your children will soak up. They will sit in the house, they will soak up the things that you say, they will see what you do, they will take all of that there. And whenever Hannah was young, she had a problem pronouncing some of her words, and she ended up, she had to go to the speech therapist. So she went to the speech therapist down in the health centre in Lisburn, and whenever she had finished, and she had to come home and do all these Suzanne and all this, lolly and all this here, yeah, see. She didn't do any of that anymore, right? Well, I had to do it then. So she had to sit and go over all these sounds with her. And at the end of it, the girl, she says, so that's very good. I don't think we need to see Hannah anymore. But she says, there's just one thing. She says, is your daughter pronounces her vowels in a very odd way. She says, is your husband foreign? And of course, Shelley, she laughed and she went, yeah, she says, I'm from Collybeggy. That's why he talks like that. So that was that. But the truth of the matter is, they had actually picked up some of my accent in the house. And Hannah, she was pronouncing words in the same way that I pronounced them, which clearly wasn't to the speech therapist's liking. And she thought there was obviously something very wrong. But they do mimic you. There's no doubt about it. And so the way that we talk and the way that we behave in the house is the way that very often our children will pick up. They will see that as normal behaviour and they'll copy it. As was said earlier on there with David, monkey see, monkey do. That is very often the way that things work in the home. I would have to say, Gillian is probably the best example of a Christian person I know. She is very, very much her father's daughter. She will find the good in anyone. She will never find her running anybody down or saying anything about them. She would do anything for anyone, and she will never complain about anything either. And even if somebody hurts her or somebody did something on her or something was said about her, she would actually sit and defend the person that did that. That's the type of person that she is. She'd be really cross if she heard I was saying this here tonight, and I'm glad in some ways that she's not here, because she'd also be really, really embarrassed. But that's the truth of it. And I think and I hope that a lot of that our kids have picked up. I'll probably say this, if there's anything else, they probably picked that up from me. The good bits you can take, they've probably got from Gillian. But there's no doubt, you'll see the wee bracelets, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Well, that's pretty much the way she loves her life. And that's the way that she's always done that there. And that, I think, has been really, really good for her children. And they notice it. And they notice the way that their mother behaves in the house. You didn't take my own mother. My own mother wasn't a Christian. But she was a really, really good example to us of what a mother ought to be. As I say, my dad, I don't really remember my dad being in the house a huge amount whenever we were growing up. Friday nights for us were always the night whenever my dad was out on a Friday night. He was out on a Saturday night as well. But Friday night was the night whenever you lit the fire was always lit, roaring up the chimney. These were in the days whenever there was no central heating. Okay, so you had one fire in the living room, that was it. And to get the sofa pulled up to the front of the fire, and you'd watch the Rockford Files or something like that. Somebody will remember that whenever that was on. And that was our Friday night in there with my mother. That's the way she did with us. And you know something? My mother wasn't a Christian, but she sent us out to every Christian meeting for children that there was in Collybaggy. We were at the whole lot of them. Because even at that stage, my mother realised the value of instilling those things into their children and wanting her children to be Christians, even though she wasn't herself at that stage. I think it's also important, as an example of that there, is in church life. Church for us has been a place where we have found our best friends. It's a place, to be perfectly honest with you, if we were in trouble, you're the people we turn to whenever we were in that there. It's where our social life is as well. It's where we meet with people more regularly than we meet with our neighbours that live around us. And I'm not sure sometimes whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that we should know them better than we do, but I think it shows you the strength of what this place is. And it is absolutely central to our family life, because actually the friends that our kids have, we're friendly with their parents as well. And that's been a really bonding thing for us as a family, that when we talk, we don't talk about people that the others don't know. We all know who we're talking about, and we all socialise even together as well with that. And that's been a really, really good thing as well. I think, though, there's a danger sometimes in Christian families that children almost become institutionalised. And what I mean by that is that church attendance becomes really, really important. Now, church attendance is important, but I think whenever you're brought up in a Christian home, and maybe it's easier for me to see because I wasn't brought up in one, that your Christian life has got to be real. It has to be about a living relationship with the Lord Jesus, not just about attending meetings. And sometimes you can attend meetings, but actually you're not really there. You know, you're there in body, but you're not in spirit. That relationship that you have with the Lord Jesus has got to be real. And for us, that's something that we really, really wanted and have always wanted to instill into them there, that you believe in a God who is loving, that you believe in a God who is interested in you, that you believe in a God who is able and that he acts, and that you believe in a God who does great things, that the Christian life is not dull. The Christian life is not something that just revolves around sitting and, you know, just this ritual that you go through. It's not, it's something living, it's something dynamic, it's something that you have day in and day out, and also it's something that will take you into a far, far better place than where you are today. And that is what we've tried to really try to instill into them. And it's funny because, as I say, I think for me growing up in a house that wasn't didn't honour God, and were in, indeed the Lord Jesus, to be perfectly honest with you, was just a swear word. That's all God's name was in our house. I really want our kids to have that real relationship with him, and make sure that what they have, that it is real. But for us, for them to see that, they have to see that in us too. The second thing that the Lord has done for me that I think we need to pass on to our kids is also that Jesus has accepted me for who I am, and I have to accept my children for who they are. I can remember having a conversation with a guy in work one day. He was a fella who was, his life was in a real mess at the time. He was going through a divorce. He was an alcoholic. His life, he had moved out from his wife and his child at this stage. And I remember standing talking to him at work, and he was really, really under conviction at that time. He knew he needed to be saved, and he knew the only one that could fix the life that he had at that time was the Lord. And I stood with him at the front, and he says, but I can't. He says, I have all this stuff going on in my life, and I need to get this sorted. I need to get my marriage fixed, and I need to come off the cigarettes, and I need to get off the drink, and I need to do this. And I remember saying to him, Michael, You don't have to do any of that. You come to Jesus as you are. Come to him as you are with all of that, and he'll sort all that there out. All you need to do is come to him the way you are. The way our kids are exactly the same. Our kids are very, very different. Now, when you look at them up on that screen, there's none of them, I don't think, look like us. I think my sister-in-law, she has two children, and they're like clones of her, the two of them. But our children, I don't think, even look like either of us, never mind, that there. And in personality, they're really, really different. Hannah has always been the quiet one. She's the compliant one. She will be the one that loves rules and is terrified if she steps outside them. Beth's not so quiet and tends to be the one that would rather ask for forgiveness than for permission. She'll usually do the thing and then ask for it afterwards. Philip, on the other hand, he is probably the most undemanding of them all, and he would be quite the silent one in the house. He doesn't really talk a huge amount, probably because he can't get a word in. And Rachel, on the other hand, she's a gabby one. She's good crack. You go out for a walk with Rachel, she'll hardly draw a breath from you leave till you come back into the house again the whole time. They're all really, really different, the whole lot of them. But I think at the same time, you value that, the fact that they are different. As I said before there, if you place great value in education, career, sporting achievements, all those kinds of things that are there, that's not necessarily wrong, but it is if it's unrealistic of what your child's capable of. Your children are different, and God has made them different, and they're all gifted in different ways. With that there, if you go back there to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it talks there about spiritual gifts being imparted to people within the church. And Paul makes the point in that there, that in the same way that you have eyes and you have ears and you have fingers and you have hands and you have arms and you have lots of other bits of your body, they're all different, but they're all needed. You need to be different, but you also need to be pulled together with that there. And so does with your children. They're all different, but God has never intended anything for them other than the way that he made them. And I think as parents, sometimes we need to be really, really careful with that, that we don't demand things of our children that aren't there. Sometimes you get people that actually almost try to live their life through their children. The fact that I wasn't a rugby player, because that was going to happen, but you know what I mean? That I wasn't one of those. I want Philip to be a rugby player. You can't do that. If Philip doesn't want to play rugby, I can't make him. The same way if I want to be a doctor, and because I hadn't the brains to do it, I want one of my children to be a doctor. You can't do that. Your children aren't gifted for that. That's not where God wants them to be. So therefore, leave them. Don't leave them, but support them where they are and let them be who God has done. I think the other thing sometimes we have to help our children with, and Joyce sort of talked about this here a wee bit, is actually help them to accept themselves. I think children deal with a whole pile of things now that we never dealt with whenever we were that age. You take the internet. The internet's brilliant. I mean, I can sit on the phone here and I can look up maps of Baghdad or whatever, and you can see things that, I mean, you just couldn't have seen before. Access to information like that. Be safe. You'd have been going through stuff at school whenever you were there. If you were being bullied or somebody's giving you a hard time or whatever's going on, you came home and that was a safe place. Do you see now? There's no escape. They can get you anywhere. They'll be on your phone. They'll be on your tablet. They'll be on your laptop. No matter what, you're there. They deal with all that. Body image, massive, massive thing for children. I have never seen, and I think Facebook and I think social media plays a big, big part in that. You never see anybody looking their worst on Facebook. Everybody, the makeup's on, the hair's done, all of that. There is real pressure to look good all the time, particularly with girls, but you know sometimes with the fellas as well. And I think sometimes for us, we need to teach our children that there's value beyond the outside. The external is not that important. And that's a real fight against the culture of today, because that's what's drummed into your child from day one. But it's actually what happens inside them and what is in their heart and what is in their head. That's of value. The outside really doesn't matter that much. And that's a big, big thing. So for us to accept who they are, but them for accept actually who they are as well. I think as Christians, we really need to hammer home the point of this. Your child, I think as Christians, I think we should be a big, big step ahead here. Because what we teach our children is that our children are made in the image of God, that they have value before God, that they are perfect in every way, because that is the way that God has made them. If I've got an imperfection, and I have plenty of them, right? So let's say because I didn't grow any hair, I'm 5'7 3/4, and that 3/4 is really important, okay? But 5'7 3/4, that is the height that God wanted me to be. He didn't want me to be 5'8". He didn't want me to be 5'10", or he didn't want me to be 6 foot. He made me as I am. And you know something? Do you see in God's eyes? That's perfect. That's the way he has made it. Even your imperfections are perfect whenever God puts them there. And I think sometimes we really need to hammer that home in children. You take evolution. Evolution teaches our children that they are no different from a single cell life form lurking in the bottom of the pond. They have no more value than that. You are an accident of birth. You just happened, and one day you're going to die, and that's the end of it. That is not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches you that God knows the very heads, the very hairs on the head of your child. That's the value that they have to God. I think sometimes we need to keep drumming that home to them and let them believe that God loves them and that he knows them and that they have value in his sight. The third thing, God disciplines me, so I have to discipline my children. Discipline. Right. The stories. There are so many. Oh, I was actually trying to think about this earlier on, and do you know something? I can't really remember that many things about Beth and Hannah and some of the things that they did. I think it's because we were so wrecked. We had 4 children in 7 years, and there's actually bits of it are a bit of a blur. Rachel, on the other hand, I remember more about Rachel and some of the things she got up to. Rachel, who took a stone one night and went up to a neighbour and went around his car 360 degrees twice the whole way around it. At which point, Gillian came in to me and said, "You have to go up and talk to that man about his car." And then said, "Pack your bags, we're leaving, we're moving, this is it, we're going." Things like that there. Going to Debbie Martin's house one night and actually cutting all the hair off one of her dolls, hacking the hair complete, and then coming downstairs. We didn't know this for years, that she had actually done that, but she did. One other day, which was really bad, sitting in the barber's in Moira with Rachel, and she was on my knee. She would have been about just learning to speak at the time, and she had an awful habit whenever you said something to her, you had to repeat it, or she kept on saying it. So she just said, "There's Pamela." You had to go, "Yes, there's Pamela." If you didn't say, "There's Pamela," she'd go, "There's Pamela. There's Pamela. There's Pamela." So you had to go, "Yes, there's Pamela," and that stopped. She's sitting on my knee, one tiny wee room with one barber seat in it, and this wee guy getting his hair cut and the barber working away. And the next thing, this quite an overweight girl came in along with her daughter, or with her son. And Rachel looks at me and goes, "That's a fat mummy in this tiny wee room." And the girl looked over at me, and I could feel my face going really red. And I thought, you know something, I'm going to have to say, "Yes, that's a fat mummy," because if I don't, she's going to keep repeating this until I don't. Oh, it was absolutely awful. Terrible. There are some, you know, I couldn't actually say anything that night because she did it in all innocence. There was no badness involved in it, but I must say I was absolutely mortified at the time. But there is a fundamental misconception about discipline. Some say it's a really negative thing, but you know it's not. God speaks about discipline a lot in his word. You go to Hebrews chapter 12. It says there, "My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines and scourges every son that he receives." Now, you think about this. By the way, I used to explain it to the kids. If there's a wee lad, Bradley Kendi, lives up the street from us. So Bradley Kendi is misbehaving out in the street. Am I going to go out, get the hold of Bradley Kendi, give him a good shake and drag him into your house and tell him he needs to behave himself? Well, probably not, because I'll end up with a police car at the front of the house and I'll be in big trouble for that. But no, I obviously won't do that. Why won't I do that? Because Bradley Kendi's not my son. And I don't mean any harm to Bradley, but I don't love him. He's not my son. If one of my children's misbehaving out in the street, that's completely different. Because at that point, I will go out and I will chastise him. And why do I do that? Because that's my child and because I love him. Discipline is not a sign that you're a bad person. Discipline is actually a sign of love when it's applied the right way. And that's what you need to be careful with it sometimes. We kind of find, you know, when you're doing something in bad temper. And I've done it where actually they drive you bonkers and you've just reached the end of your tether and you're about to just go for it. And you think, no, because you're doing this for the wrong reason. And you've lost control of it. You've really lost control. And you need to be careful with it. But at the same time, how you discipline your child is really, really important. They need to know the difference between right and wrong, because you're going to shape them actually for the way that they are later on. You pick your fights. There's things that's worth having fights over. There's things that's just not. Let it go. And sometimes you need to ask yourself sometimes, why is my head about to explode here? Is this actually more down to the fact that I've had a really bad day at work and I'm a bit grumpy, and there's other days this wouldn't bother me and today it does bother me? You need to be careful with that. One thing I would say this, and I think this has become quite prevalent in circles today, don't try to be your child's friend. You're not their friend. You're not their mate. You're their parent. And those are two different things. Your mate will tell you what you want to hear. Your mate will support you in everything that you do. Your parent won't. Your parent will tell you when you're out of line. Your parent will pull you back into line again whenever you need it. That's what you're meant to be, a parent, not a mate. I think there does come a point whenever you get older that I say yes. A father and a son, a mother and a daughter, they do become best friends. That's different, but when your children are young, they need to be led. They don't need you to lead them. You need them to lead you. Get it the right way around. Fourth thing, very, very quickly here. God gives his time to me, so I give my children my time. I was driving to work the other day, you know, and it was, actually just hit me. So I'm driving up the road here, heading for Nuts Corner, at whatever time it was, and I thought, I come to God and speak to him when I want. When you think about that, this is the God of the universe, the one who made everything that we see around us, and yet we have access to him as and when we please. It's, you talk about the tail wagging the dog. I mean, it really is something that you just think. And not only that there, but he is interested in the smallest details of my life. He wants to know the big things that are going on, but you know some? He wants to know the small ones as well. And he's interested in everything that there is with that there. His ear is never closed to me. Never. Is that not a fantastic example of what I should be like as a father? That my ear is never closed to my children, that I make time for them. Life is really, really busy. I mean, we had four children in 7 years. At the time that was going on, both of us were working shifts. There was many days whenever Gillian was going into the Royal, if she was working at 4 to midnight and I was working in early, we met in Sainsbury's at Sprucefield and swapped cars. She got into one, I got into the other, drove back to Ballanderry, she headed to Belfast. It was like that. And that was absolutely normal. And then after that, there was, you got home, there was the dinner to make, there was bottles to make up, there was baths, there was lunches to make, there was clothes to iron, there was the beds, everybody had to get to bed, and all that there had to be done as well. And that was whenever you didn't throw in swimming lessons, judo, GB, brownies and BB. If it had been down to me, that last group probably would never have existed. The basics were enough. Those were actually the bits that sometimes I used to think, I was probably going to have a heart attack at some point on the way home because you get so stressed out because it's all going on at once. But we found that spending time individually was really difficult, but you know something, it was really, really, really worthwhile. And there were a number of times, these were probably the times whenever we really got on our own with them. Big time is bedtime. And Beth will remember the Corrie stories, yeah? Just these Corrie Ten Boom stories about her. I remember that was the big thing with Hannah and Beth, sitting up then before they went to bed, telling them a Corrie story before they went down, doing their quiet time with them, praying with them, taking that time. Sometimes that meant, you know something, you had to get started a bit earlier. You get Philip and Rachel bathed, nappies changed, bottles done, into bed, and then you start, the second shift starts with the two elder girls and get them done. That's what you did. But really, really brilliant times. And again, the chance that you get to instill into them the importance of God's word and the importance of spending time in prayer because you do that with them. We never left them to clean their teeth on their own whenever they were that age because they wouldn't have done it. Well, it's exactly the same whenever it comes to praying and reading their Bible. You don't leave them in the room to do that either. Second thing was this, Saturdays. Saturdays were a big day for us, and we always tried to keep that free as the family day. Whether that meant that we went to Killsborough, Castle Welland, Margaret Hill, Lurgan, or up to Granny Logan's, wherever it was, that's where we went in those days. And those are days that, to be honest with you, I still remember. I know they remember as well. You're building memories for the memory bank whenever they grow up. Those are really important things. As they get older, I'll tell you another thing actually we did. Was also a no TV in the room policy within the house. Bedrooms, no way was a TV ever going into one of those. Basically, we live in our living room. Now, part of that may be because I'm too tight to put the heating on during the winter, and we light the fire, so there's only one room heated, so they all have to congregate in one room. Top tip, you want to keep the family together, keep the house cold. That's how you do it. But in all seriousness, it's a really, really good thing to do. Spend time together as a family when you're just in the room together and you're actually all watching the same thing on the TV. Doesn't happen a lot anymore. Used to be when you only had 3 TV channels, but you know you have everything going on. But if you're all in the one room and you're all doing the one thing, you've got connection with that there as well. It's changed now. Kids are getting bigger. Some of them are up in Belfast. But you know something? Call in on the way home from work and go into the house. Meet up with them in Starbucks up the Lisburn Road and go in there and have a cup of coffee or go out for a fry on a Saturday morning. You need to spend time. In the same way, if you spend time with God, you build that relationship up with him. Well, it's exactly the same with your kids. You spend time with them. You build up that time with them as well. The last thing that it is here, and this kind of overflows the whole lot, but that's why I kept it to the last. God loves me, so I love my children. Now, I think of all the things that I've mentioned here this morning, the night, you think about wanting to be an example to them, accepting them for who they are and how they're made, discipline them and invest in time in these. None of those, for me to be honest with you, there were times whenever they were younger, I must admit, I was absolutely shattered. There's no doubt about it. But I must say, none of it was a labour. Being a father is the thing I have loved most in life. I really have absolutely loved it. It has been the best, by far and away, the best experience of my life. And I don't mean this to sound really trite or boastful or anything like that, but I would happily lay my life down for my children. I absolutely love them, and I am so glad that God allowed us these years to rear them and shape them and make them into the, and to help to make them into the people that they are. But regardless of how much I love them, I can't love them the way that God does. He loves them in a far, far better way than I do. And for them to understand that, it's far, far more important to know that I love them than that. The love of God is the greatest comfort that I have in my life. I have no idea what lies ahead. I really don't. And there's things that terrify me. You know, you put on the radio in the morning and you hear about some young person that's put the car into a tree down a road somewhere, or something that has happened. And I'll be honest with you, it absolutely terrifies me that something like that could happen to our family. And I don't know. You would rest in the Lord's strength of a time of that come and trust him to carry you through it. But I do know this. I know that my Heavenly Father is there. I know that his love is there and has been there right through to this point where we are now. And it will be there as we move forward, regardless of what the future brings or what it doesn't bring into this year. If a great trial comes into our life, and it will at some point, because that's the nature of life, I know that's not an accident. I know that that is part of the Lord's plan and whatever it is that he brings to us. And I have to accept that. But I give you one really, really big piece of advice for this here. It would be that you pray for your children. Some of you here today are grannies and grandmas, you know. Pray for your grandchildren as well, and I'm sure you do it. But I would say this here to you. Pray for them before they're even conceived. You know what the Psalm 139 says about, you know, that God knew you before you were conceived in your mother's womb. Pray for your child before it's even conceived. Pray for them when they're in the womb. Pray for them when they're in the home, and pray for them whenever they've left at it. Most of all, pray for their salvation. Nothing else in life really matters apart from that. That's the most important thing out of the whole lot. When Jillian's granddad died, he died in 1990. George found a letter that his mother had written a few days after George was born in 1937. She'd written it to a friend who'd eventually passed it to Jillian's granddad, Alec. And she wrote in it that she'd had this wee boy, that they were calling him George, and that the one thing that she hoped for more than anything was that he would come to know the Lord Jesus as a saviour. That was her greatest wish for it. A week after that letter was written, Annie Russell, that's Miss Jillian's granny's name, she died of an infection that she picked up during childbirth. George was less than 2 weeks old whenever his mother died. But you know, her prayers were answered. She only had a matter of days to pray for her son, and yet God honoured that prayer, and George was saved, and I'd say has become an example to us as a family of what a Christian should be and what he is like. Maybe you're here tonight, look, and you've got a prodigal son or a prodigal daughter. Maybe your daughter or your son isn't leading the life that you hoped and you prayed that he would. Maybe you thought that there was something that they would lead their life in a different way that you did. I worked with a woman called Maureen Greer, and Maureen had two sons, and I would safely say Maureen is one of the finest Christian women I've ever known in my life. Maureen has two sons, and tonight both of them are in McGabry prison. One of them is in there for murder, another one is in for possession of arms, and the second one is due out shortly, but the oldest fella, Peter will be in there for probably in the next 20 years before he ever sees daylight again. That's not the life that Maureen had planned for her sons. She continues to pray for them that the Lord will save them, as do I. But if you're that mother or that father tonight and you're actually thinking, where did I go wrong? What happened to my son or my daughter, and why are they living the life that they are? I want to read a poem to you here tonight very, very quickly. It's one that I found a number of years ago. It's called Mother's Elbows on My Bed. I was but a youth and thoughtless, as all youths are apt to be, though I was a Christian mother, you had taught me carefully. But there came a time when pleasure of the world came to allure, and I no more sought the guidance of her love so good and pure. Her tender admonitions fell but lightly on my ear, and for the gentle warnings I felt an inward sneer. How could I prove my manhood, were I not firm of will? No threat of future evil should all my pleasure kill. But mother would not yield her boy to Satan's sinful sway, and though I spurned her counsel, she knew a better way. No more she tried to caution, for ways she knew were vain, and though I guessed her heartache, I could not know its pain. She made my room an altar, a place of secret prayer, and there she took her burden and left it in his care. A morning, noon, and evening, by that humble bedside low, she sought the aid of him who best can understand a mother's woe. And I went my way unheeding, careless of the life I led, until one day I noticed prints of elbows on my bed. There I saw that she had been there, praying for a wayward boy, who for the love of worldly pleasures would her peace of mind destroy. While I wrestled with my conscience, mother wrestled still in prayer, till that little room seemed hallowed, because so oft she met him there. With her God she held the fortress, and though not a word she said, my stubborn heart was broken by those imprints on my bed. Long the conflict raged within me, sin against my mother's prayers, sin must yield for mother never, while she daily met him there, and her constant love and patience were like coals upon my head, together with those imprints of her elbows on my bed. Mother love and God love are a combination rare, and one that can't be beaten when sealed by honest prayer. And so at last the fight was won, and I to Christ was led, and mother's prayers were answered by her elbows on my bed. My dad was converted, finally, when he was 75 years old. He waited a long, long time. And after he was saved, a cousin wrote to him, and she said to him in the letter, "Your mum and dad will be rejoicing tonight with the angels in heaven." And that's really true. You don't know the outworking of your children's life. Sometimes God lets you see. He gives you a window into part of your life while you're alive. If you're here tonight and your son or your daughter is that prodigal, well then, keep praying. You don't know what God will do with them in the future. They might be 75 when they come to him. They might be a whole lot less than that. I don't know. But trust them in your prayer. But keep praying for your children.
Thanks very much, Jeff. I just want to say as we close, I think Jeff, at the very beginning, made it very clear. You know, as a church here, our faith and our trust in what the Bible says has to influence everything else we do. And that's why, you know, even in the things that we heard earlier and the things Jeff was saying there, you know, as Christians, everything goes through that filter. I want you to know that we maybe started a lot of conversation. There's a lot of people here, and it's just good for us to be talking and sharing things as we try and think through how to parent our children better and how to be consistent and how to, it's just something that's good to even talk whenever we have those hard days and to know that we're not the only ones that are struggling. And so I want to encourage you, please do talk. And if maybe you're here and you don't know anyone, I just want you to know that this church, we want to be available to help. Maybe you're not a Christian. We want to be available to even pray for you and to pray for your children and, you know, even to have a place where you can come and be part of some of the things that go on here. Come to the Mothers and Others, or send your child to Upper Bound or to the Sunday School, or feel free and know you're always welcome to come to the services themselves. And be around other people that are trying to do good by their children also. Tomorrow night, in this little series of real life issues, we're going to finish the week by looking at the issue of loss. I suppose it's the last great issue. People who we do love and care for sometimes are taken from us, and there'll be various people as we've had each night this week sharing, and Colin Cooper, who lost his son who he loved and cared for through suicide, will be coming and talking to us at the end, and it'll be a somber night in one level, and yet I hope and pray a really helpful night for us to be with one another, to talk to one another, and whether it be the loss of a parent, the loss of a sibling, the loss of a partner, the loss of a child. We hope that you'll be able to come and join us tomorrow night and find some help there, and be able to start some conversations with people who you can identify with also. Let me pray and then you're free to go. Let me pray. Our Heavenly Father, we do thank you for this wonderful privilege that is the privilege of so many to bring up children. We thank you that they are a gift from God. We thank you for entrusting them to us. And we just pray and ask that on those days that it is just so hard and difficult, when it seems that we are moving backwards rather than forwards, we ask that you would give that level of patience that we need, that ability to talk to someone, to have someone even to talk to, and that ability to consistently, even in those difficult days, even where there is a need for discipline, to demonstrate the love and the care that we have for those children, and that you and your grace in time would overrule our mistake and save those children and keep them safe in this world and grow them up to be people that honor and please, and indeed who we can treasure and enjoy the time that you give us with them. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.